WhatsApp Clarence
072-567-1567.
Welcome back. It is 10:36. Views and news through till 12 o'clock with me, Clarence. And in a short while, we'll chat with David Harrison, CEO of the DG Murray Trust. He's published an article in the Daily Maverick detailing the national strategy to accelerate action for children, which was approved by the Cabinet in December 2025. He has described the strategy as powerfully simple. Because it focuses on the basic building blocks that have been neglected. Love, food, safety, stimulation, and health care. So we'll talk to him about the article and, of course, why it has taken 30 years, I guess, for the obvious needs to be codified into a formal national strategy. 30 years it's taken. But before we get there, you've been active on the WhatsApp line, so let's play catch-up, a couple of voice notes in related to conversations that we've had.
Clarence, goeiemôre, man. Floris is op haar woeste klerie. Yeah, talking about Chinese horoscope. I was interested in that when I was still younger, but nowadays, now. But it would be interesting to know what Donald Trump Chinese horoscope is saying. And by the way, do you know who his hairdresser is? That guy's hair is always on point. Or is it some form of extension or hair implants? Have a good time. Bye.
I don't even know how to respond to that, Floris. Maybe he swirls his hair. I don't know. Let's take a listen to another one.
Hey Clarence, thanks for the great show this morning. Talking about 2016, my memories of that was that it was a time we swore would never be taught again in school. So many famous people died that year, including Prince, George Michael, I think David Bowie was it? There were a number of really significant singers, performers, authors who died, and the year just seemed really cuck. And then of course came everything else. So yeah, that's my memories of 2016. And of course, the most significant thing for 2016 was that it was a moment of great student engagement activism around the Roads Must Fall and Fees Must Fall, which reminded us how significant free and valuable a free education could be. Okay, that's my thoughts on 2016. Bye, Carla.
And Carla remembers it so very, very clearly. I can't for the life of me. I don't know. Was I busy in 2016? What was happening in 2016? And the reason why Carla sent that message is because Barbara told us that everybody's thinking back to 2016. Apparently a 400% increase in reflections to the year 2016. And there's a lot of this is on social media, is playing out there, a lot of speculation about why. And one of the reasons that she says was the pre-COVID kind of freedom, maybe just, I don't know. Why is 2016 so important? It's only 10 years ago. 1986 still stands out, for me as the year of my great independence. Nothing substantial kind of springs to mind in 2016. I don't know. Was 2016 that important year for you? Let us know. WhatsApp line 072-567-1567. If you wish to join us in conversation with Dr. David Harrison, you're welcome. You can also call us at 021-446-0567. Welcome, Dr. David Harrison. Always good to have you.
Thanks so much, Clarence. Great to be on your show.
Maybe we should start at my that original lament. Yeah, why has it taken 30 years for these obvious needs to be codified?
It's a very good question. You know, as you said in your introduction, children are programmed to thrive, and they just need the most basic ingredients. I mean, what can be simpler than love and food and safety and brain power stimulation and healthcare? These are very, very basic things. And we made our development and our country's development too complicated. We went for issues without really understanding that it's the experience of our children who are going to grow up to be adults in 10 or 20 years' time, but it's their experience that's actually going to shape the wealth and the health and the well-being of the country. Mm. And so we went down the wrong track, and we've got to come back to these simple ingredients that are most powerful and will be good not only for children, but for all of us if we get it right.
And you want to do that in the first couple of years of their lives. We heard the term thrive by five. Is that where it's most important?
It's absolutely critical that we start right from time of conception, and they're very, very basic things that can be done, and we can get into those. But you know, a child's brain is developing in the womb. Whether the mom receives sufficient food, whether she avoids alcohol, these are the things that shape a child's life before they're even born. And then the first two years of life is where so much potential is crowded. And if we can simply enable children to have access to those basic inputs, their abilities explode. You just get this massive. This massive explosion of potential in the first 2 years of life that can then be built on, that can then be scaffolded, but miss out. It's like the first few dominoes in the domino set. If you're trying to create a domino effect, you've got to start with the first ones, and if they're missing, you're not going to be able to trigger that chain reaction.
You're going to play catch up for the rest of your life, and that is the virtuous domino effect that you talk about. You talk about nutrition reform as well. Tell us about the reform that you are happy to see.
Yeah, so I mean, what we are happy to see in South Africa is really for the first time, government saying we've got to do practical things for children. And so the focus on early childhood development that the president and the minister of basic education now speak about is an absolute breakthrough, and it's very, very encouraging. But you know, the brain needs not only learning ability, but it also needs the food for that learning to happen. It can't simply be stimulation; it's got to be food, and that's where we as a country have not yet got it right. The child support grant has been incredibly valuable in providing a basic level of protection, but it's lost value over time. It hasn't kept up with inflation. It's fallen further and further behind the food poverty line. So that's the first thing we have to do. We have to get the child support grant back to the most basic minimum that children need for their brains to grow, and that's the food poverty line. But secondly, you know, it's interesting. We're a country that most people have enough food for pup, but they don't have enough food for protein, and that's really the strange situation we have. We have fairly, sometimes fairly chubby children, but they're short, and what that reflects is the fact that they're getting enough sort of kilojoules, but they're not actually getting protein, and so we need. Society, we need business, we need government to come together and say we need to prioritize 10 protein-rich staples and find a way to reduce those prices to bring those to children. And the third, in terms of nutrition, I just want to mention is we also have this crazy situation where children who are severely malnourished go to the hospital, but our system has broken down of providing them with the therapy they need, which is food. And so restoring our national nutrition program that provides malnourished children with food is an absolutely critical component. And these are the three things that if we can get that right, we will be on the right sort of path to development.
Let's continue our conversation about nutrition. You're calling for a double discount on high protein food. What does that mean, a double discount?
So what we're saying here is that, as I said, protein is the problem. The price of protein, and here we're talking about beans, obviously meat and dairy products and all the rest of it, are simply, not affordable to many, many families. And so there's got to be a substantial reduction in price. And the only way that that's going to happen is if industry discounts a basket of 10, what we call them, best buy protein-rich staples, And if government comes to the table and matches that discount. And in that way, if industries were to say for one food label, we won't take profit on those basic staples, we'll lose out a little bit, but we'll get more people coming through the door anyway. But if we have that discount from industry and government comes in with the retail subsidy, you can double discount and effectively reduce the price of those proteins by about 20 to 25%. That's the sort of innovative thinking that we need now. But business is going to have to come to the table.
And maybe historically they haven't come to the table to the extent that we had hoped. They are profit-driven entities. Are there any ethical or economic levers that will make them come to the table this time around?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. There are many countries where the retailers and the manufacturers do see themselves as part of a national commitment to making sure that no child goes hungry. I'm thinking about Indonesia, Malaysia, some Latin American countries. There is a strong expectation of the retailers, not that they shouldn't make profit, but that needs to be married with the commitment to ensuring zero hunger. What the retailers have said to us is that, look, they're prepared to come to the table, but government needs to come to the table too. Mm. We could argue that actually grants are providing significant turnover into retailers' pockets, but I think, and we've heard from the president that retailers need to come to the table. I think that there's an openness now that there hasn't been for a long time. If both sides come together, they're prepared to make a deal.
And we're going to talk about alcohol as the root evil. It is Dr. David Harrison. He is the CEO of the D.G. Murray Trust. And he has stated that widespread alcohol abuse is the primary preventable cause of child violence and learning deficits. We're going to probe his mind some more right after these. Welcome back. Views and News, 10 minutes from 11 o'clock, in conversation with Dr. David Harrison, CEO of the D.G. Murray Trust. We're talking about the national strategy to accelerate action for children, adopted by, endorsed by Cabinet over December 2025. Let's play this voice note first before we go into our next question, Joe.
Hey there. With regards to this discussion happening right now, the gentleman has hit the nail right on the head. I've been saying this for years now. It's very easy for the government to keep interest or inflation on certain products, specifically starches, very low, and therefore the increase in price of those items. But the proteins, inflation on proteins is well over 20% per annum, and the prices are just skyrocketing, and the people who are on the breadline cannot afford it. Yeah. And it is the balance of protein and starch that we need as a population, but it's not being managed properly and controlled properly. I'm so glad this discussion has been had. Hain.
Thank you, Hain, for that. Dr. David Harrison, is there a reason why starches are subsidized and proteins not?
So it's not that starches are subsidized. It's just that by their nature, they are cheaper. So where we have sort of a lower middle income country like South Africa, as people are starting to get discretionary income or moving from an agricultural to a cash economy, people buy the food that's going to make them feel full.
Yeah.
That's going to make them feel like they're not hungry. And we know that empty calorie type of foods, chips and pop, do that. They fill you up. And people, so we have the situation where people want that food because it makes them feel full, but at the same time, they can't actually afford the food that is necessary to grow their brains and grow their muscles, which is the protein. So we get into this vicious cycle where people buy sweet drinks because it just makes them feel good. It makes them feel satisfied. People buy pop. That's the one side. There's a behavior side to it, but it's driven by the fact that people are simply not able to afford the basic proteins that they need.
Okay, let's go to alcohol that you've identified as the root evil. And the question is, how do we ethically balance that regulation of a legal industry against the immediate safety of a child in a home where care is absent?
Yeah, so I don't think alcohol is a root evil. I think that heavy drinking, excessive consumption of alcohol, is what's driving incredible harm to our children, harm on the roads, child murders, intentional violence against children, against women, the highest rates of fetal alcohol syndrome in the world. All of these are indicative of a country that drinks too much. And so, you know, when we have a look at an industry, the alcohol industry is certainly supporting jobs, it's supporting tourism, but that's at lower levels of consumption. You know, that's when the industry is selling people, you know, a maximum of, for example, two drinks a day. But where we have a situation in South Africa where people are drinking three, four, sometimes five, six, seven drinks a day, that's not good for the economy. And it's certainly not good for children. Mm. So that's really our focus, is to say, look, we've got to really optimize the benefits of all industries in South Africa, including the alcohol industry. But what we can't have, because it causes more harm than good to everybody, is heavy drinking. So we need strategies that are targeted, that are focused on the times of the day and night, on the sort of sectors of the industry that are contributing to heavy drinking. So where we have industry, for example, selling 1 liter bottles of beer into communities where the unit price of that alcohol is three times lower than if you were to buy a 330 ml can, that's contributing directly to heavy drinking. So those are the type of things that we have to address in South Africa. And it's absolutely critical, not only for our children, but if we're serious about issues like traffic accidents, like you've been talking about this morning, and obviously gender-based violence.
You, just in closing, you've called Trailblazer, maybe, to drive this. And the question is our country, our country's government structured in a too siloed way, maybe, to implement what should be a multi-sectoral approach, I would imagine.
Particularly for an issue like nutrition, which relates to the Department of Agriculture for production, Department of Health, Social Development, Trade and Industry, etc. And so because everybody has a responsibility, it's spread very, very thinly across these departments, and the officials. And I'm not in any way disparaging of the officials, but it's sort of pushed down to quite a junior level. And so nobody is actually acknowledging that good nutrition, nobody's empowered. No one has the mandate. No one has the authority to ensure that good nutrition becomes the biggest driver of social and economic development of the country over the next 10 years. And that's what it is. And we have to reorganize. We have to find ways to reorganize our government that acknowledges the tremendous influence and the tremendous power that nutrition has to transform our future.
We're going to wrap it there, but thank you as always for your time, Dr. David Harrison.